Everybody
yes,
here.
Yes, we are.
Yep.
Yeah, everyone's here. Good, good. Welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week in Apple. But before we get going, I just wanted to, because this is the first chance I've really had to say anything, because last week's show kind of predated it all. Those of you that don't know, on Friday we found out that Eric Lanigan had died last year, and it was a bit of a sad event. I'm not going to go into too much because, you know, Kyle's done a really lovely eulogy on the news show. If you haven't heard it, you should go and have a listen. But I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who's put up on the dedications page to Eric, the book of condolence that we put up. There's been lots of comments on there, lots of recollections about him, lots of lovely stories about how people got to him and what they thought of him. And the reason I wanted to do a shout out for it on this show is because although it's kind of really fresh and raw for us that it's only just happened and people are coming out with a lot of things that are deeply felt, of course it's coming up to nearly a year since Eric died, so it's the anniversary for the family in less than a month's time. So if you've got anything you'd like to say, please go to britishtechnetwork.com, go to the blog, and it's the last story on the blog, Remembering Eric, and put a comment there just to say something about Eric, say what your recollection is, a story, something that happened that you laughed at. And I know his dad's gone through all the comments and read them a couple of times, and he's really, really chuffed at what everyone said about Eric. So please, if you want to do it, go to the blog, Remembering Eric, and put a comment on. Because that would be wonderful. He's going to be dearly, dearly missed by this network, absolutely. Joining me to discuss the week in Apple. Fantastic bunch this week. God, blimey. Couldn't have picked them out of nowhere. First time on the network. Unbelievably first time on the network. Andrew Zarian, how the devil are you, mate?
Hey, thanks for having me. I can't believe this is the first time I've been on the network, considering I've watched your stuff for years, and it's great stuff you're putting out, and I'm shocked that this is the first time we've gotten together.
Yeah, no, absolutely. How's things, mate? It's been a bit of a rough week.
Busy.
But...
busy. You know, the new year is here, doing shows almost every other day, and exhausted already. I just want to go away on vacation.
Well, we like that kind of ethic.
Yeah, that's my work ethic. Work a couple of weeks and then go away.
Get yourself a beer, mate, and you're right in there. Next to him, it's the man himself, Mr. Mattcast, putting forward for prizes in the podcast awards.
Oh, you see me pimping myself out
about
finally. I don't usually do that, but I figure after about 10 years, it's about time I got one of those damn things.
Too right. Too right, mate. I think you should. Definitely.
And so nominations are open for Podcast Awards. If you go to podcastawards.com, you should nominate this show too. Nominate everybody you like.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Put a nomination in and Todd Cochran can ignore ours completely because I think I upset him when we left Tech Podcast Network. Oops.
Oh, well, I left a long time ago too. You know, I was in there in the early days when it was founded, actually. I did the logo, which they need to change, by the way, because it sucks. And I can say that because I did it.
Because you did it. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Good point. No, vote for Adam because he's, I mean, what are you, 12 years, 10 years in there?
10.
Yeah.
We haven't done entering that my 11th year.
We're only in 6 or 7. So you've got to, I'm not going to push the RNC.
Well, here's the problem is I think I do get nominated quite frequently and I make the final list. The problem is I'm in the tech category with Twit, and then it's just all over.
Never mind.
They win every year, I think.
Yeah, no, it's just bigger vote. The army, the Twit army.
Yep.
Next to him, Doc Rock, late sub. Thank you very much for joining us, sir.
Thank you, thank you.
No. How's Hawaii, you lucky bastard? Sorry, that just slipped out.
It's actually been really good here. We've been going back and forth between sunny and chilly, but our chilly is like 72 degrees.
Yeah.
Or like, what was that, 22? So yeah, no biggie. You guys are like, what?
That's when you can spot the foreigners because they're all still in shorts.
Yeah.
And you guys are in coats.
Well, that and the glowing Steve Sandy colored legs.
Yeah.
Hey.
And what color is a Steve Sandy leg, Steve Sandy?
Right now? Parrot?
Is it pale blue by nature?
It is pale blue today because it is, 29 degrees Fahrenheit and snowing in Denver.
You got the altitude for that, haven't you? So it's dry.
Yes, we do.
It's dry snow. But
nice snowfall coming down out there. It's very pretty. Yeah. Oh,
good man. How's things?
Who, with me?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Well, right now, okay. you may know what I'm talking about later on, but anyway, for the time being, I'm doing absolutely great. Still over at the unofficial Apple weblog every day. And Mr. Doc Rock, I sure miss being with you every Wednesday.
Yes, never mind. You'll do it again soon. Just start another podcast and be done with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone knows Doc doesn't work, so.
He works harder than anybody I know. He's constantly starting businesses.
Only with vampires. Yeah. What have we done? Right, we've got some reviews. Thank you very much to people that have left reviews. We've got one for the news show. And, of course, Kyle doesn't get to read news because he's only got 5 minutes. So Adam JP has written in and said, if you're looking for a quick five-minute podcast, then this is the one for you. Carl's an excellent host. Funny side to him that makes it entertaining. Don't change the format. Keep it is well worth the download. And Rare Black Magic says, no one does the news like Swagger. Thanks, man. Superb. We've had a couple of reviews for the Mac show as well. Photographer left us a review in the US store. 2 stars. Thank you very much, sir. Pretty lame. Thought I'd give this one a try. These guys are pretty lame. And they try to be funny, but it doesn't work. Way too much chit-chat, unrelated to anything. I, being nice, giving it 2 stars. I think you're looking for I'm there, Sunshine. Everyone's opinion is their own, of course. And if you don't get us, that's fine. Move along. Eric Sandstorm says, from the American store, someone who does get us, great to get an honest and funny perspective on all things Apple from an ever-changing group of people from all areas as well as a consistent group of folk. Keep up the good work. I listen to several tech podcasts and I look forward to the Mac Show the most each every week. Ah, that's wonderful. 1 star. No, I'm joking. 5. Thanks very much, man. If you've got a review for us, stick it in the iTunes store. Makes a wonderful addition to the show. And I love especially reading out the ones that don't have very nice comments in them. Oh, it makes my day. Thank you very much. The Week in Apple. Right, let's get into it. Top story. I don't know what... The rumor mill's going on. We've got a patent dispute that's gone on with Tridim Innovations this week. That's about storage that references bookcases. Is anyone familiar with this one?
If I remember correctly, this is the same company that tried a while back. If I remember correctly, yeah, Tridim. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Basically, they were upset about a computer-controlled display system for displaying a three-dimensional document workspace. They had something that looked vaguely like a bookshelf, which, what was the name of that one media app that was out there for a while?
Monster Library.
Yeah,
written by Mike Midas from Apple. Now he's at Apple, but he used...
Yeah, Delicious Library. Delicious Monster was the company. But anyway, it was, if anybody should get sued, it would probably be them. But I don't know. These people tried this before. I don't know. It's nuts. You know, they nailed them. Let's see. It wasn't Tridim. It was Mirror Worlds LLC, another one of these companies that goes out and buys up vague patents and then sues everybody for them. So,
yeah, it's the thing here is a computer controlled display system for displaying a three dimensional document workspace. Is disclosed. One or more document objects are present in the document workspace. And they're specifically pointing the finger at Apple Time Machine, CoverFlow, and Safari for iOS 7 and 8. And I can't think that any of those four things look anything like each other, let alone what the diagram... Because the diagram here is just... It's just bollocks. It's just something listed with documents, 24A, 24B, 205B. And they don't seem to bear any great relation. Any of those.
The problem is with these vague patents that exist. You know, essentially, if your product comes remotely close to what I'm doing and I have this kind of patent that's kind of vague about a product, I could attempt to come after you. I mean, I could come after you regardless, but it gives me more of a reason to go after you because my patent is so vague and open.
Yeah.
You know what I think about when I hear this is there's a really, really great YouTube video, and it's made by a guy named, I believe it's David Padavarian. And so he does this long rant about why he hates Puckabill's canon. And it shows all of these songs that basically use the exact same chord progression so you could fit it inside, you know, canon or canon in D. And then so it goes to show you that certain songs that even come out at the exact same time, and this happens with anything that has to do with tech, you might not be the only person who thought of this idea that you think is now, you know, world-saving and patentable, but the patent office doesn't really necessarily have a way to filter when they both come in at the same time. One just might get in the list quicker than the other. Somebody might get it, and somebody might be, you know, kind of out. So part of it is our CTO thing is just jacked. Like, it needs to go away because it's really squelching tech and being able to sue for it. But then, I guess the other side of it is, well, how do you protect yourself then? So it's a catch-22, but, you know, somebody always said there's no original ideas.
I mean, the question that I would raise, I mean, everyone goes on about the patent system being broken. It is. The patent system is broken. But the other thing with the patent office is the fact of, do they even understand what they're registering?
How could they?
Well, exactly. I mean, it's you know, if you're looking at the spin that is put on that document, you look at what's registered as a picture there, it's got absolutely subtle resemblance to any of the pieces of software that are related there. And it visually, it doesn't conform. In terms of file structure and workings, it doesn't conform with any of those things, yet they still believe there's a claim against it.
Has anybody here done a patent or have a patent?
Well, I know you have, Adam. So
yeah, I have two. And I've worked with patent lawyers, and I've gone through the process. And I mean, just to show you, in my mind, the thing that illustrated most succinctly to me that the whole system was broken was we spent several weeks doing basically patent blocking. So going back and forth and trying to make the patent as broad as possible so that no one else could come in with any sort of variant. You spend all this time doing variants. When you're doing the patent. So you have your basic idea, the idea that you came up with, and then you sit down with the lawyer and you start making it broader and broader, but in a way that it's still narrow enough that they think you'll get the patent, but it's to restrict anybody else from coming in with any kind of related or even close to your idea so that you can then take, you know, this sort of broad patent that you put together and got approved for, and then go out and make sure that they can't compete. I mean, that was basically the way it was sold to me. It's like, we got to come up with, you know, every possible implementation. So, and even you start even including technologies that don't exist. Like, in the future, if this is possible, this patent covers this scenario. So it's crazy.
What was the process like for you from beginning to end? How long did it take you to start, you know, working on the patent to the time that you got the patent?
Oh, years. I mean, you put in the application, right? And that's when you get patent pending. I think once we got the application, so it took months to put the thing together, the application, you know, working with the lawyers and back and forth. And by the time it was in, I think the patent was awarded 2 or 3 years later because they're just so backed up. It takes them so long to review it. But I think you're still, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I think you're still quasi covered when you've got patent pending because as Doc was kind of alluding to, it's all about getting in first. So it's even like he was saying, if two patents were submitted a month apart from each other covering the same thing, whoever gets in first is the person who lucks out, right? Mm-hmm. So you're hoping they're taking them. I would assume they're taking them in the order they're received, but who even knows how it works internally?
I mean, there is the fundamental of prior art as well, isn't there? So, I mean, if you've manufactured something and produced it, then...
Well, there's a review process for that too, though. Our, you know, our patent attorneys have a team that's all they do is go through and look for prior art. And then if they do pull prior art, then you sit there and work and try and find a way around the prior art, of course.
So, I mean, it sounds like you've made no money from these patents and...
No, I haven't. No, I was working for a company. So my name's on the patent, but I get nothing from it because that's how that works. Because when you sign up for a job, you sign away all your, any ideas or anything that you might have. So
Paul Ums in the chat room has suggested that he's patented incest in Norfolk. But I'm afraid I think, mate, there is lots of prior art going on there. So, and bestiality is probably covered as well as. So I'd leave that one out if I were you, mate.
But yeah, these guys are so overwhelmed. They have no idea what they're approving or not approving. I mean, it's just impossible. So I don't know how you fix it, but you know, I agree with the sentiment that the whole thing is somewhat broken.
Yeah.
I mean, nowadays I think we're a little bit more aware of patents and patent laws, and I think people in the know kind of understand it better now. But can you imagine 25 years ago when some of these patents were being filed and they were totally broad right. patents dealing with technology and software? People just their heads were spinning, and they just said, "Okay, this is fine. It's okay to patent that."
I think Apple still pays licensing to Amazon for one click, right? On the online store.
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
Joke.
Yeah.
One click purchasing's got a patent that Amazon own.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And they sued everybody for that. And they won, I believe. So which is why Apple licenses it.
Oh jeez. Oh, that sounds dreadful. What a mess. Apple has acquired media analytics company Symmetric ahead of the Beats Music relaunch. I thought this was quite an interesting one because clearly this is looking at metrics of what they're getting for their downloads, etc., peaks, troughs, trends. But I don't understand what they're missing that they feel that this company is doing, unless they're clearing up the market of competition, which I can't say there's a competition there either. But I mean, is Beats Music deficient on that? Does anyone know that there is an issue?
It can always be an acqui-hire situation where they're just after engineers,
right? So they just
for their own thing.
There's no technology coming with that. It's just personnel.
Yeah, I mean it's tough in Silicon Valley, from what I understand, to find really good people. So if you need to build up your analytics department, and these guys are the best at what they do, then you may want all those workers. So just buy the company and get the workers with it. I don't know if that's what's going on here, but I mean, that is a common practice. So that's always a factor when these acquisitions happen.
I mean, I'm reading the story, but there doesn't appear to be a USP that Symmetric have that have made them particularly attractive over anyone else. British firm based in Bridge Street in London. But I don't understand what the purchase is for and whether there's a deficiency that needs to be made up. That's always kind of interesting.
From what I remember, they also did Spotify and Last.fm's metrics, right? They did their analytics for a while.
Oh, right. Symmetric did.
Yeah. I think they were doing the analytics for them. So it may have something to do with the way that they were calculating these numbers, and they were happy with, you know, the way that they do this.
Another cool thing that they did was ebooks. So they did also ebooks, TV shows and film stuff too. So it's not only just the Beats Music thing. I mean, the story is based off of that because of the rebranding of Beats Music, but they're going to be able to put this metrics also in with your iTunes store in general, which we all know needs a breakup. But, you know, the movies, the iBooks, you know, the audiobooks, TV shows, films, all of that, including games. So maybe, I mean, it's a lot more than just music, but it's just getting the music spin because of the timing.
Yeah, I mean, as well, there's another story this week that that since the inclusion of books, iBooks in iOS 8, they're getting 1 million subscribers a week on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, tying in with your comment there about the books, Doc, that would make a lot of sense, I guess. Probably it's more to do with that, maybe.
That was once this month that made sense.
Is it lunchtime for your builders or breakfast time?
Yeah, it is exactly, it's a union, so it's 9:30, they're taking a break. I'm like, yeah, I can crack the mic and leave it open.
Can't piss off the union. Oh, no. Excellent. God, there's some boring stories this week, Jesus.
There's nothing going on, that's why.
No, exactly. I'm trying my hardest here, fellas. Feel free to jump in with any of your own stories at any point. Superstream Sunday is coming. NBC Universal is going to send the Super Bowl out on your iPad or your Mac for free, no cable subscription required.
Yeah, Super Stream Sunday. That sounds like it's going to be really special there. And it is kind of nice that they're doing that without having to have a cable whatever you want to call it, you know, some sort of cable connection there. So that's pretty impressive. 11 hours worth of coverage that they're going to be offering. So I don't know if that will just be U.S. or if it's going to be worldwide. That would be kind of interesting to find out.
Well, now, Paul Wheatley's invited me up to his house for the Super Bowl because he gets loads of mates around up in Scotland. And I've got that as an option, and I may go up there. But I've also got an option with Steve Neighbour, who's got some tickets for the O2 for the official UK Super Bowl party that starts at 9 o'clock down in London, which I think I'm going to go to, perhaps. The only thing that bothers me is the Super Bowl's been shit for the last few years. It's the worst game of the season, though.
It'll be much better this year because the Broncos aren't in it.
Okay. Well, yeah, when was the last time that the Raiders were in it, Doc? Come on.
I opened myself.
Don't get me started with the Jets. I grew up a Jets fan, so my parents set me up to be a loser for the rest of my life.
I've got the Chargers. You and Gary. So come on.
You and Gary are side by side.
Right. I think I'm about to play me Joker here, fellas, because all my family live in Detroit. Nice. No one's going to match that record.
Yes.
No one's that bad. Although they did well.
I love that.
This is interesting, right? That they are going to essentially give this away to everybody. I watched it a couple years ago on their internet stream. I think I forgot who was providing it, and it looked great. I mean, it looked great. It sounded good. There weren't hiccups. So, I mean, we're going to see more and more of these big games and big events being readily available to almost everybody worldwide.
Do we know, are they going to make it available on their Apple TV app? That was the one thing I didn't hear. Or am I going to have to AirPlay it? I want to watch it on my big screen.
This is NBC doing it, but there's nothing mentioned about it being on their app. It just says stream to iPad and Mac.
Yeah, right. The only thing I see is that it would require the NBC Sports Live Extra app, which is a freebie out there, but I seriously doubt if they'll do anything on Apple TV.
So NFL is not putting it through their NFL Now channal.
This is NBC.
Because right? There's an NFL channel on the Apple TV.
Well, you've got Game Pass.
That's a whole separate deal. The NFL channel theoretically is all them, but then the broadcasting side of that is DirecTV. So I think so far, like when I watch Man U on the NFL, I mean, sorry, wrong football. When I watch Man U on the NBC Sports app, I have to do the AirPlay bunker across to the TV. It's the only way it works. And although they do have that app available on the Xbox, because I have been able to pick them up on the Xbox from time to time.
Right.
Now, the thing that we need to know about whether it's region coded, though, because the chances of me getting this app is virtually zero, I would suggest.
Well, yeah. And like I said, there's always the option of going, I'm assuming I'd be able to pull it up on Safari and then just AirPlay it from there.
Yeah, that works too. Adam, are you totally cut your umbilical cord?
Yeah. We have no TV at all.
You know, the only thing that's stopping me, and this is why this is interesting to me, you know, since you said there's no news, this is a big deal to me, because the only thing that's stopping me from cutting the cord is live sports. And most of that consists of, you know, footy. So if more and more apps are like this are becoming where I can either pull it as a tile on my Apple TV, my Amazon Fire Stick, or my Xbox, I would cut it completely. It's really just live sports.
And I think the cable companies know that, right? That a lot of, I mean, I'm one of those people. The reason why I'm still paying $200-something a month for cable is because of sports and the content that I can't get outside of the cable provider. So, they know this, so they're going to hold you to it. But I do think in the next couple of years, we're going to see more and more people, more and more companies starting to give away their content on devices like Apple TV. And that's why I'm hopeful that the next Apple TV really gets these content deals in place.
Well, it's interesting you say that. You know,
and the news guys are real good. The news guys have said, screw it. We're just going to go ahead and do it. So the news guys are loosening up the tie, and hopefully it bleeds over.
Well, you'd like to think so, but the interesting thing that happened for UK subscribers to the NFL Game Pass is we got virtually none of the playoffs. Every one of them is blacked out. So the only, there was Paul Wheatley was telling me, I think there was only one game in the playoffs that actually wasn't blacked out.
Yeah, I tried to explain to him how blackout rules work and why it works that way. And And he just looked at me like, you're pissing up the tree, dog. I mean, we've been dealing with that for years. If you live somewhere,
well, the blackout rule is sensible, though, right?
Sports team, it can happen to us too. Like stuff gets blocked off of the TV because they want you to go to the stadium and have a hot dog, a beer, and get in a fight, as opposed to watch the game at home. And so yeah. But these things are antiquated because they're built in the early 60s when the packages first came out. I'm sorry, late 60s. I think it was about 68. And blackout rule kicked in about 72. And they've never let it go. But most of the stadiums no longer could hold the population of the city that the game is now in. So you're better off to let it be on TV because people are still going to go to stadium. Raiders still sell out. They haven't won a game in 12 years. But, you know, it's equivalent of Birmingham's football team. They suck. The stands are still full, though, because it's not.
Yeah, the blackout rules. You're absolutely right. They're ridiculous at this point. They've gotten a little bit better here in New York, especially with the Knicks. But let's say it was like a national game on ESPN or TBS or TNT. They would black it out there, and then it would also have a local channel. They would black it out on the local, and they would have it on MSG. Or they would black it out on MSG also, but then have it on the local channel. So it's so bizarre how these blackouts work, even in the region within, you know, the market that they're in.
It's funny that you guys are talking about the blackout thing, because I had a dad from my kid's soccer team who started up a whole company for busting blackouts. And the way it would work is you could, if you wanted to watch it on your local station and it was a blacked out game, you could go donate. And then literally they were trying to get enough funds to buy up the tickets so that they could bust the blackout. And then they would donate the tickets to like charities and stuff like that for, you know, so kids could go to the game or whatever, but then they could watch it on TV. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I don't think it ever made it, but.
Well, it can't work now because the tickets are freaking $250 to sit in the bleeds.
Yeah, but I mean, just the sheer number of people, you know, like locally who would want to watch it, you know, they'd donate 20, yeah. 40 bucks or whatever if they could get it on TV. So
that's cool. But Andrew is definitely correct, because when I was in San Fran last, I went to go pick up a Raiders game. And again, they're my favorite team. I'm not going to lie, but they haven't won a single football game in like 12 years, except for we always beat the Broncos anyway. But to sit all the way in the very top of the stadium was $258 a clip. And then that being said, also, when I came to Denver last September, I wanted to go catch a Rockies game. No, I'm sorry. It was going to be a Broncos game with Steve. And it was the same thing. Like, it was last minute. And yeah, the tickets were like $300 a pop to go sit in the snow. Yeah.
Don't even get me started. I have courtside tickets for a Knicks game on the 3rd, and I just paid for them and my head was turning.
How much?
My head was spinning around and around when I saw the amount of zeros on that thing.
So are you close enough to get Beyonce to spit on you?
If I went to a Nets game, yeah, she would definitely spit on me. But
Nets, not Knicks.
No, I think she spits at all the games.
She's spitting at every game.
I'm sure I'm going to hear from Beyonce's lawyers in the morning. Go on, how much did they cost, Andrew? Come on. You got to tell us now. You can't.
Over $1,000.
Jeez.
For the worst team in the NBA.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, man. I sit and complain about England ticket, price of England tickets, and they're only 80 quid. It's just like 120 bucks. That's it.
I mean, luckily for us, we could get a $24 hot dog at the Garden. So that really helps.
Oh, man, is it a good hot dog, though?
No, it's the worst hot dog you'll ever have.
Yeah, that's the thing. See, that's the thing with British football grounds. They charge you over for the tickets, and there's really expensive pies that you can't buy anything anywhere else. You can't bring your own food. And the pies are shite. They're awful. Gristly, horrible pieces of crap. Not even nice pucker pies or anything like that. Super Bowl, I'll be watching it one way or the other. Definitely. But I hope it's a good game this year, because the Super Bowl is always a shit game. You go through the playoffs and there's some real nail-biters, and then you get to the Super Bowl and it's crap.
So. But think about the marketing with the Super Bowl, right? Like, people that have no clue about football will watch it because it's a Super Bowl and that's what you do. And people that hate football will still watch it for the commercials. I mean, it's a win-win for them. They're making, I mean, millions and millions based on the licensing of that event and the ads. And most of the people watching, half of them don't even care who's winning.
So really, you guys are honestly telling me that the adverts are the draw at the Super Bowl?
I don't know if anybody saw this, but there was a study last year and they said what percentage of people are actually watching for the Super Bowl, and it was like 55% are only watching for the game.
Jeez.
So, I mean, I guess it's a great business they got. They're running a racket there.
Sungast in the chat room says he doesn't care about football or the commercials, so he's about to leave if we don't move the topic on soon.
And I know him. He will leave, and he'll write you an email, too.
Brian Monroe says, what's a pie? What's a pie? A pie. It's a meat pie. And they're small, and they're that big, and they're usually lukewarm. You've probably got some kind of food poisoning within them.
You know something, Ewan, because it is Mac related, do you guys know what started the Super Bowl ad craze being what it is now?
Would it be the Mac ad?
Sure.
Most freaking definitely. Prior to that, nobody gave a shit. Shite. I don't know what's the right word to say.
That'll either do.
Yeah, nobody cared. And ever since that, all the other companies next year went, hey, we need to make an epic commercial for the Super Bowl. So if you're going to piss on us for talking about the Super Bowl, have your Mac history correct, because we started that shit.
Yeah.
In hip-hop, we call that dropping the mic.
You did drop the mic. You dropped it right there.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Apple has filed. No, I know, but James Brown dropped the mic. That's what I was...
I'm teasing you.
Okay, man. Apple is predicted to launch an optional stylus accessory alongside its iPad Pro, the 12.9-inch one.
I hate that rumor. I really do.
Yeah.
I think they saw you freaking hilarious. Steve
Jobs. I'm going to do a demonstration of Steve Jobs.
Oh, hang on. Don't wait till I get the camera on you, dude. Right, here we go. So that would be Steve turning.
Yes.
In his grave.
Yes.
In his grave, despite the fact they burned him.
Sorry, Steve. You know I love you, but that's just... Hey, shut up, people. Stop making crap up. It's so irritating.
They've got a really complicated drawing here of the battery power source, the transmitter, the additional sensor, accelerometer, gyro, the haptic actuator, the controller driver, the demodulator decoder 1112, and the receiver 119. And it's bollocks. I can't, there is no way on God's green. I said that Apple shouldn't bring out a watch, and lo and behold, they're saying that they're going to. Still not seen it yet, though. And I'm not talking about the watch tonight, by the way. I hate that watch. And if Apple bring out a stylus, I will go buy a Windows PC the following friggin' day.
I don't think the concept of the stylus is out there, right? Like it's more and more people are using this. More and more, it's becoming more of a powerful machine. The iPad. So having a stylus for the creative types makes a little sense. I don't know about the 12.9-inch iPad Pro that, you know, they're claiming that this belongs to.
Okay, here's what's wrong with this 100%, okay? And I am a designer kind of person, right? If you go to Macworld UK and you look at the pictures, am I the only one that noticed that the Helvetica has been stretched? That is not the right size of Helvetica, and Apple has never in their entire life stretched a font. No graphic designer that made it a week out of getting slapped in the back of the head by a teacher has ever stretched a font. So that's what makes it even more funny.
Are they claiming that this leaked image of this pencil is the product itself, or are they saying like this is the idea we have for it?
Those are patent illustrations, which are crap.
Yeah.
From 2010. Always. Haptic stylus.
Deliberately.
Haptic stylus from 2010. Patent application. Not necessarily reflective of the company's current thinking on the device.
Yeah, right. You know, my biggest complaint about the entire rumor is that right now there are a lot of really good styluses that are on the market. And yet you don't see every iPad owner running out to buy a stylus so that they can write on their iPad. You know, in fact, we just had a story this morning over at Tua about the folks at 53. Their pencil stylus is now being sold in the Apple Store and Apple Store online. So, you know, I don't know. I don't see it. I really don't. It's stupid.
Get rid of the rumor. There's a case where, in my mind, this exists. And one of the reasons Apple could have a stylus, and this isn't even rumored, so I'm just throwing this out here. It's totally just speculation. But, you know, if they're truly with the Pro Tablet wanting to market this at illustrators and creative type folks, and they want to build in true pressure sensitivity into that screen, then maybe they need to develop a stylus to have at launch. Because right now, the third-party stylus is, while they do have quote-unquote pressure sensitivity, it's not part of the display like a Wacom or something like that, right? It's built into the pen, and it's kind of pseudo. And if you've ever used one of these styluses, it's okay, but it's not ideal. And I know a lot of illustrators who would never, ever, I mean, they'd give up their children probably before they give up their Wacom tablet. So if you're making a Pro tablet and you're targeting at those types of artists who they demand a stylus and they want a stylus, then in that world, it makes sense. But I don't think that there's even a big enough market for Apple to warrant doing that.
I was going to just say that too. You're absolutely right. I don't think that's big enough of them. I mean, you know what that reminds me of? Do you remember when Microsoft had that courier that they were planning on doing? It was called the Microsoft courier.
That was the paper people. The 53 people left, and that's where the software came from, I believe, if I'm getting my history right.
I mean, is there...
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. The courier was an awesome thing.
Go ahead, Under.
No. It just reminds me of that, but they killed it, obviously, because it's not broad of a market. A 13-inch iPad is quite a significant size, but it makes sense if they're planning on docking it. That's the next version of the Air where it's dockable. But again, we don't know yet because it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, is there a world where Apple kind of looks at cutting into the Wacom market, or is the Wacom over there and we're over here? Because, I mean, if they're going to do it, they're going to have to... They can't just say, oh, well, we've got an alternative over here, and it's about as good as Pages is compared to Word with the Wacom tablet. They've got to really try and cut into the Wacom market if that's what they're going to produce. And if they're not going to produce it, then there's enough shit styluses out there to do a bit of drawing in paper and that kind of stuff.
I really don't think that the market is big enough for one thing. And they're not very knee jerky in order to do stuff like that. I mean, I can see if there was a way to circle this conversation into the enterprise thing, then maybe that makes sense. But, you know, I still don't get it. And the whole idea of just making a supersized tablet doesn't really make sense either. Because if you're going to attack Wacom and you really want to get money and you want to have a high-profile product, you need to create Cintiq. And you need to make an iPad a little bit more like a Cintiq. And then that makes sense. And again, the market is too small for that. That's just not the arena that Apple plays in. You know?
It's interesting that you mentioned enterprise, though. You know, there's also enterprise in education. So you may have the executive who, you know, wants a tablet that he can take notes on. You may want a teacher who wants to use it as, you know, like an overlay. I mean, there are some applications when you start thinking about styluses. Or another one someone brought up to me, and this has been a big market for Apple's tablets, is medical. So doctors who want to be able to take it around to take notes. So you start combining a lot of these little niche verticals, and then you can maybe make a case for it. But I'm not putting a lot of stock in the rumor, but I'm just throwing this out there, is there are some use case scenarios where, maybe there is a thing here. And the only way it happens is if Apple really thinks that they can bring a stylus to the market that works with the iPad in a way that's well beyond what the current third-party options on the market provide for people.
Kelly in the chat room saying that she reckons there might be a tablet, but she's putting no stock in the rumor itself. And she makes a good point that says maybe there's a problem that Apple is solving with this that we don't even know about yet.
Yeah. I mean, there always is that option.
I absolutely marvel at the ability of Apple to bring out another device that we can hold wrong. There we go.
Well, it's a very different Apple now. You know, we look back a couple of years ago to now. It's a very different company, and they're, you know, rather than being streamlined to one device and that's it, and that's all you're getting this year, and then maybe next year you'll get the updated version. They're adding three or four versions of everything. So it's Steve Jobs is definitely rolling in his grave at this point, because that's not the vision that he had for the company initially.
Yeah, the four device thing's gone out the window, hasn't it? A long time ago.
I'll just say one
but,
more.
I mean, but here's the argument. Is that a bad thing? Is that a bad thing that Apple is providing you with, you know, from the entry level to the higher end for almost every single product that they have. I don't know if that's a bad thing. I think they have to do it to be competitive because they're competing with everybody at this point.
And I, actually, it is how they step their game up. I would say that there are some of us older curmudgeon types who kind of hate the, let's call it gentrification of Apple, for lack of a better term. And I'm only saying that because I just watched this Saturday Night Live thing about Brooklyn, which is
funny. Oy vey, dude.
Being from there. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people that hate it. I kind of like it because now we get to sit around and talk about our world dominance and not, you know, seem like, oh, you guys are closing, you guys are going out of business, or you guys don't have any compatibility, all of that. I mean, I'm glad that conversation is over. But I do sometimes feel like, you know, I the OS is dumbed down a little too far, or the iPhone would be so much better if we weren't trying to protect ourselves from certain things and, like, you know, be able to create certain apps that would give you more access. So I kind of sit in the middle of that, being from both sides of it. But I think it's, in the end, it's a great thing that they've expanded to the point where they are part of every conversation.
Listen, all I want is my bezel-less MacBook Pro. That's all I'm waiting for.
I'm with you, brother.
Well, you can make your own in Photoshop, Adrian. Andrew.
You can, Adrian. I can, Jesus. And I could just glue the image to the screen and I'll be happy. I've been screaming for this thing for 2 years now. People think I'm insane when I talk about bezel-less on the Mac.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, why do we have a bezel?
You know, keep the bezel. It's just gigantic. You know, you compare it to, like, you see that Dell XPS 13, who, I don't know how great it is, but it's an interesting look. There's no point to have a bezel, really. I guess it lines it up with the keyboard. So unless that rumor where the keyboard was expanded kind of made sense for a bezel-less or a thinner bezel for the Mac. But that's what I'm waiting for. I'm hoping that it shows up sometime soon.
I don't know if
when they were black, I thought it was about glare, but they're silver now. So that idea went out the window.
Says the chisel. You know, I mean, I think also as well, though, does the bezel provide a bit of protection for the screen? Because, I mean, if you drop the Mac and the screen's right up to the edge, then that
becomes... Yeah, if you drop the Mac, you're effed anyway.
Well, no. I mean,
Mac, you're a douche, period.
Mine gets a... No, give over. Mine goes out with me to work, mate. So it gets a lot of abuse. My little iPad, my little MacBook Air here... I love taking that and shoving it in the back of the camera bag, but it takes a hell of a lot of abuse. I mean, it's in and out the bag. It gets dropped on concrete. And if it was up to the edge display, then I think that probably would have crapped out by now. You know,
I mean, that makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, for in that scenario, it's interesting because the direction the product streamlining is changing now because they haven't updated some things. They have updated others. So I'm curious if that's going to, you know, they're going to go back to streamlining all their lines to have this conformed look.
Yeah.
You want to try something really cool? I just did it. I know it looks super dorky, but if you take out your iPhone 6 or 6 Plus, because it's basically bezel-less, and you sit in an angle to your laptop and you put it up until it just covers the screen, look at that. That is just gorgeous, man. Like, can you imagine using your computer every day and that's all you saw for your screen versus... Yeah. What we have to deal with today. And again, it's not a bad thing, but I'm on Andrew's camp. I think a bezel-less Mac would just be beautiful. And I agree with what Ewan says. 90% of laptops sit on a freaking desk and never move.
The chat room suggesting that the show title is My 11 Inches Gets a Hell of Abuse. mate, the only thing I've got 11 inches long is my arm. Right, a last story then before we move on. And we'll keep this pretty quick because I don't want another discussion about ARM. Intel CEO responds to rumors of ARM-based Macs, says relationship with Apple is strong. Brian Cranich said that he had a hot chocolate with Tim Cook at Camp David and they kissed and made up and they're all happy again now. So I made that up, by the way. There's been stories about we've kicked the ball around of ARM taking over in the Mac line, but is it that you always come back to this dual coding issue, don't you? And the fact that you know, a unification of the code is something that prevents it and gives Intel its its niche within the Apple world. Is this going to go away, or is it still going to just stay there as a rumor that never comes to fruition?
I think this is like Apple learning, you know, Intel's getting their just desserts in a way, I guess, the same way that IBM did. Is like, I think right now it's a thing that Apple can use to kind of keep Intel in line and say, look, you know, we've got designers in here. We make awesome mobile chips. We have capabilities here. We know where to get manufacturers to build these things for us. You know, here's what we need you to design for us, sort of thing. I mean, this is what they were doing in IBM at the end of the PowerPC days, right? It's like, we need more energy efficient chips. We need this, that, and the other. And IBM kind of said, well, no, we're not going to do that. And Apple said, well, okay, fine. Take our business elsewhere. And I think there's some degree of that here. I don't know how much, but I think that's part of the play here. But I wouldn't say, I would, all that to say, I'd say never say never, really. I mean, Apple definitely has the capability to do it. Will they do it? I don't know. But anybody who's saying, well, they won't because they want to deal with the transition or all this other stuff, we've been through this before, and Apple's pulled that off very successfully. So I don't think that's a detracting factor.
And I don't think a lot of people, you know, in hindsight now look back and say, well, no, leaving a PowerPC was an awful idea for Apple. It ruined it for us. I think moving to Intel was a good thing. But for the other side of this argument, I think 2 years ago, this discussion had more merit, considering Intel was a little slower for these better battery efficiency chips and lighter chips and quicker chips. Now we're seeing these latest, you know, 14 nanometer chips that they're putting out that require no CPU fan, and they're pretty fast. I mean, they're putting out these pretty good chipsets, and that's right up Apple's alley. I mean, to put a fanless chip in the MacBook Air is exactly what they kind of want. I think Intel is becoming a little bit more progressive as far as adapting to the mobile chipset. They've transitioned at a much quicker rate than they had previously. I think for Apple, it may not be worth it for them to take that risk and start doing it on their own and then cut off their user base and say, listen, this is our new way that we're doing things.
They kind of screwed up the Broadwell launch, though. I mean, we're way delayed on that, right? At this point.
Yeah.
For Intel or for Apple?
For Intel.
Yeah. It was supposed to come out, I believe, in November, right? And now they're saying it's going to be the end of January. I don't, you know what's interesting about this? Where Apple, when you think of Intel's next move, I think of what is Apple going to do? And you're right. Intel has been a little slow and they've delayed it. And I wonder how much that's affected Apple as far as their release cycle for these updated machines.
Well, I think that's why we don't have new MacBook Pros, right? I mean, absolutely, we're right, waiting on those.
Absolutely right. If you think about it, one thing that's bothered me about the MacBook Pro line is that there is no quad-core 13-inch. It's still a dual-core i7. And if Apple could control that, I guarantee they probably wouldn't want that. They would probably want to have a quad-core CPU in that machine.
Interesting. It's going to rumble on, I think, until it's going to be one of those kind of arguments that it's going to be a no until it's a yes, and it's not going to stop until it is a yes. We're going to be talking about this for forever, even if it never comes.
Well, again, I think it's a leverage point for Apple at this point, and which is why we're hearing about it.
Yeah,
and you know, I do think they're kind of using it to that degree, and I have no doubt that they have designs and they're working on designs, and they've like planned this out probably years ago.
Yeah.
You know, just like they did with Intel, you know, when Apple said we're moving to Intel, it came out that, you know, well, we've had OS X running on Intel for years. So, you know, I think they want to make sure that they have options moving forward. And if this continues to be a problem and they can't ship the kinds of machines that they want to ship, then they've got to do something, right?
That's a great point. It's the leverage. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good point. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2. We love them to bits. We have got podcasts going back to the old Bagel Tech days, and it was nice. I'm really grateful to UK2 because when we found out about Eric's death, I went back and I found episodes of Eric on the server, and you can go back to the middle of 2012 when we were broadcasting with Eric on the Big Show regularly. And it was nice to sit down and watch it. And I know Eric's dad went back and looked at a few episodes as well of His Son in Full Flow. So thanks to UK2 for hosting our space, giving us unlimited server space. We can put as much up there as we like and not restricting us in any way. The server we get from them would cost us £400 a month. So we really appreciate their support. Please go and support them. Go to britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors. Click on the UK2 logo. Make sure you go through our portal, even if you want to sign in, because when you use the offer codes, then we get credit for it. We get the kudos of the fact that you've used it. I've had a lot of people write to me in the last few weeks saying, yeah, we use your offer codes. Well, did you go through our website? No. Well, it looks like you got them off a voucher code site then. So, it's not the same. Go through our site, please. And if you think about it, just send a note to UK2 and say thanks for supporting the big show. Thanks for supporting the Mac show, the British Tech Network. And thanks to Wirecast, because they've given us two full copies of Wirecast 6 Pro, which runs absolutely beautifully, does all of the streaming that we use on the show. So thank you very much to Telestream. If you've got a need for Wirecast, then it's a great piece of software. Go ahead and get it. But they've got things like ScreenFlow as well, which is absolutely superb. So check it out for that. And very reasonably priced. It's about the $50 mark at the moment, I think. Excellent. Right. It's time for the cool thing. Do you have a cool thing for us, Mr. MacCast himself?
Yeah, actually, I just did a episode of the MacCast that I've been wanting to do for a long time. So in addition to being into Macs and stuff like that, I'm also become pretty into tabletop gaming, so board games and what have you. And so I just did an episode all on iOS board games. And an app that I've been wanting to try for a while, I haven't actually played the tabletop version of this game, but is a game called Lords of Waterdeep. So I go back to the 80s, big fan of D&D, and this is a Dungeons & Dragons themed board game. And for those people who have played, a big common thing in Dungeons & Dragons is the way it starts out is you're sitting in a tavern and someone comes in and they have a job for you, right? And they're going to send you out and you're going to do this job and you're going to earn gold and what have you. So the concept in Lords of Waterdeep is you actually are playing that person who walks into the tavern. So you're working for a lord and you're controlling going in and hiring different kinds of adventurers to go out and do missions to do various things on the game board. And it's absolutely a ton of fun and it's got a great tutorial built into it. So it kind of gets you up to speed on the game. And I'm probably definitely going to be picking up a tabletop version. The good news about iOS games, board games on iOS, is they tend to be about $7. I think this one's $6.99 US. Whereas like the tabletop version, I think is over $50, $60. So it's a great way to get in, find out if this might be a game that you like and kind of try it out and also learn it at the same time. So Lords of Waterdeep, I think it's from Playdeck on the App Store, and it's $6.99.
US, $6.99.
US, yeah. So you got to do the British conversion for me.
Cool. Brilliant. Good pick. Doc, what do you have for us?
I just wrote this up yesterday, believe it or not, for the MacUserPro.com, shameless plug. And the application that I found is not really an application. It's a utility. It's a web-based utility. And the name of it is WordMark It. And it's basically at wordmark.it.com. And what it's for is really, really amazing. And I can't believe I never found something like this before. Or when you're doing design work, whether you're just goofing off or you're, trying to do something on a professional level, you find yourself looking for this one particular font that's going to make this thing look great. What's really a pain in the butt is whether you're using Illustrator, Pages, whatever, you highlight the word, you got to click on the thing, and some apps like Illustrator, Photoshop allow you to just arrow down and cycle through your fonts. But Pages and Word and sometimes Keynote, like whatever, you got to highlight it, change it, super irking. So WordMark It basically shows you your sample word in every font that's loaded on your computer.
Oh, that's pretty cool because that's the thing that really slows you down.
Yes. It's driving me nuts and I can't believe I ever found it.
Well, especially if you've got loads of fonts loaded, when you get the pull-down menu down in Photoshop or Final Cut or anything that kind of stuff, it has to render all of those with the generic script and it just takes forever.
Plus it's tiny and you can't see it.
Yeah.
So this is cool because you can do some sizing. You can do plain background or black background. You can even, I believe you can do bold and italics as well. If not, if you look at the article that I put on the site, I found another alternative that does help that doesn't use Flash. It uses CSS. It's not as nice as Word Market, but it still works if you're like anti-Flash person as I am a couple times a week. Really great utility is absolutely freaking free.
You only go anti-Flash a couple of times a week?
Yeah, I'm joking.
That little?
I'm joking. I hate Flash. Oh, good, I hate Flash with passion. And which is why the new Chrome supports handoff, by the way. If you're a Flashless person and you like Chrome, and it's Chrome now has handoff. Freaking awesome upgrade, Google.
Okay. Well done. Excellent pick, sir. Thank you very much. Steve, what do you have for us?
Well, a couple of years ago, actually back in 2013, so it would be a couple of years ago, there was a kind of a silly little app called Knock that you could use to basically unlock your Mac by knocking on the screen. And I never liked the idea because I didn't like knocking on the screen there. Just recently, I think it was in mid-December, a developer by the name of Kane Cheshire came out with an app called Mac ID. It's $4. And what it does is allow you to unlock a Mac with Touch ID, which is actually pretty cool. Thank you, Doc Rock, for putting that out in the chat. And it's a wonderful, wonderful idea. I found that I actually am using it. Knock, I never used. This I'm finding to be just perfect. You get a little notification on your iPhone that says, you know, this Mac is asking for permission to unlock. You go in and hit authorize, put your thumb on the Touch ID pad, and you're in. So really, really kind of a cool app. $4. It's not right now. I will bring that up. I have run into some interesting bugs, but other than that, it's a pretty cool little app.
Excellent, Mike. Thank you very much. And last but by no means least, Andrew.
So you're bringing up one of your sponsors, Wirecast, and yesterday I had a pick set for today, but I'm going to replace it with this. Yesterday they sent out an email, and they have a new version of Wirecast for the Mac, 6.0.2. And according to the release, this is going to tremendously improve your CPU resources and your video resources on the Mac version of Wirecast. I don't know if you're running that version right now. It just came out yesterday, but I've been running it on my MacBook Pro right now, and it's really, really improved. I mean, they've done a really good job with this. The CPU, I'm doing HD recording, and the CPU is at 30% for me.
Yeah, got it. I saw it yesterday, and I thought about applying it, and then I thought, no, I've got a show tomorrow and Thursday. I'll do it on Friday.
Yeah, no, this is a huge improvement for Wirecast on the Mac for you, Yosemite.
Excellent. Excellent, mate. We like Wirecast. So I'll go and apply the – I might even be brave and apply the update tonight, and then there won't be a big show at all tomorrow. I live on the edge, me. My cool thing, you're gonna hate me for this, but never mind. It's an iPhone 6. Do you remember I've got my Rode extending pole last week, and I've found a way of getting me cool gimbal to clip onto me pole, so I've got like a little tiny mini boom, 3-meter boom that I can carry around on site. And of course, I can't see what's going on with that because I need to run the GoPro app. And then I've got to hold my phone, and I can't use two hands and hold my phone. And I got, and I've got to say, I found it difficult to find decent iPhone 6 holders. There's still very few out there that are worth having. And I found this one. It's the Best Tech one. It's on Amazon. And basically, it's for holding onto a bicycle bar. So you've got this nice clamp here that you can screw in, and then it's got a little rocker to clamp it shut tight onto the bar. But what's also nice is the fact that you've got a 360-degree bezel here, so you can turn this around to do portrait or landscape however you want. And it was a tenner. So there you go, $12.50. That's all. And it's perfect. And it holds your iPhone 6. So you can clamp it to your gear lever, or you can clamp it to anything in the car, or you can clamp it onto your bike. And it's brilliant for a tenner. Love Amazon. And you get Prime on it with that as well. Oh, the luxury of Prime. Where can we get a hold of you then, Andrew? Where are you, sir?
GFKeyNetwork.com or on Twitter @AndrewZarian. I'm on almost every day. There's something going on every single day on the network.
My pole is 3 meters long, Steve.
Why, thank you.
That's okay, mate. Where are you, Adam?
You can find me over at MattCast.com or MattCast on iTunes. I also do the iOS show at theiosshow.com with Jeff Gemmett, Michael Johnston, if you're more iOS focused.
And Doc has done the conversion for us and said that's 72 inches.
Yeah, Doc.
Yeah.
Where can we get you, Doc?
So, see, I was waiting for you in the segue, and Steve segued and just messed up my whole thing. Most of the time, I'm on the Twitter and the IG, like a lot on the IG, under at Doc Rock, of course, at MacUserPro.com, and very often hanging out with me British mates, working on me Irish sounding British accent.
Bowman's got a new show title, Both Hands on Ewan's 3 meter pole. that may win it.
You didn't like mine?
Yeah, no, I liked yours, mate. Yours was great. I've got a plethora now. I did start with Andrew's bezel, which was pretty tame in comparison by where we've got to at the moment. And Steve, where are you, mate?
I'm over at the unofficial Apple weblog, TUAW.com, and also now doing, and a shameless plug here, doing a podcast with Ross Rubin. Basically, it covers the world of crowdfunding, and it can be found in the iTunes store at the Backer Jack, BackerJack podcast.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back tomorrow night with the big show. Yeah, we've got the usual crank. I think that show title was an inevitable, I'm afraid, last week. Our gathering, Mr. Gamut, will be joining us this week, so it should be fun. See you tomorrow night, and see you next week for the Mac Show. Thanks for listening.